Today, Stacy and I were sitting by the Washougal River, and we were reflecting on something of a beautiful moment where we were right there at the breath toggle, is the best way I could describe it, between warm air flowing up from the south and a brisk, cool air flowing down from the north. We were having a really hot day. You know, we've gone from months and months of rain to now this really bright sun, and it's light laid out, and we're still just in May, so we're enjoying getting into that space, and we're sitting here in a valley. Now, if you've been listening for a little bit here, friends, lately we've been interested in presenting to you, dear listener, a theme, a symbol, an archetype, an image, something to help you get outside of your inner dialogue just for a moment, long enough to assess your world and the world itself through a symbol that we can talk about. And that sounds maybe esoteric, but it's really the point of folklore and inkblot tests and just the symbolism we see in literature in general. It's just a way for us to be able to process something that might be really important for your life right now. Right now, we're talking about the valley. Are you in the depths? Are you at the heights and you're looking down on the depths? However you find yourself right now as you're listening, this is a show about going low, going to the valley, the mysterious mother. What does this mean in the Tao Te Ching? What does it mean for you? Stacy's going to lead us through a conversation about this idea of the valley. Thanks for being with us. Let's go.
All ahead full.
Stacy, hard to beat this weather right now.
Yeah, well, it's beautiful here. We're fortunately being able to be in the shade because when we're in the sun, it is really quite warm all
when
of a sudden.
When did that happen?
I don't know. It felt like it went from winter to a couple days of spring to summer. And I'm sure we'll go back to winter at some point as well. But this is, it's really, it's a lot of fun to have that sunshine, but then also like, okay, are we going to go from using our heater to now wanting an air conditioner? Where's the middle ground?
We used to think it was good if you wanted to survive the apocalypse to get to the mountains. And that sounded very rugged and great. Turns out not that great in terms of being able to grow your own food and some other logistical problems. That said, the forest is a groovy place to hide out.
Well, and it just...
You know, I mean, there's a lot in the forest.
And the trees bring this incredible coolness when you need to calm, you know, like, get out of the heat, get out of the intense, like, sun beating down on you, and you just go amongst the trees here, hear the wind.
After we record, let's get back into the water.
Rustle.
Even though it's cold. The dog loves it. The dog has been really enjoying letting me drop her into the water so she can swim back to shore, and then she feels really great.
Yeah, so Jeff carries her out a ways, and then she gets plopped into the water. It's funny because she's been tempted sometimes to go to where he is in the water when he hasn't carried her, and he'll be like, come on, members, and then she'll like do that jump start like a couple times, and then like, but can't get herself to do it.
She really
wants to get in the water, but it's really hard to make yourself walk in there. It's best to kind of be plopped in there.
Yes.
Then you swim to the shore and you're like, okay, I had enough.
Oh, then you have a rush of joy.
Having to like force yourself to walk into the water.
Too hard.
And it's getting higher on your legs. It's colder. Your feet are now numb.
It is cold.
Well,
it's melted snow. But see, that, friends, is the nature of the valley.
Yeah.
We find ourselves camping in the valley. We find ourselves camping near all sorts of really groovy plants and huckleberries. And we saw a millipede and we saw a stellar jay and we see these beautiful trees, but we're in a valley.
Yeah.
Oh, and there's a bald eagle, and there's a turkey vulture. What's everybody doing here? This is the valley.
Well,
this is
often,
where the life is.
And so often, yes, the valley can be very plentiful and lots of trees. It could also, I mean, there it could be kind of a desert too sometimes. If it.
Oh, Bimby, hold on a second. Bimby, quiet friend. Okay, so you were saying, so yeah, valleys can be like Death Valley.
Yeah, there's...
Hot.
desert, you know, kind of more. Yeah. I mean, so
there's
sometimes
valley girls
sometimes
in the San Fernando Valley.
Sometimes it will dry up. But let's go through. We'll talk about all of this as we go through some of these chapters. I'm just going to, some of these chapters I'll read in their entirety because they're really short. Other ones, I'm just going to pick little pieces of it, largely too, because we've hit on some of these chapters in our previous episodes that you can, I don't know, go back from however far you want to. Even last week, the last time we talked about the path, there's, you know, even a couple chapters that we'll go over again. But
and we're talking about chapters from the Tao Te Ching and our version of it that we've released recently, and it is Tao Te Ching, A Playfully Sincere Rendition by Jeff and Stacey Mallinson. Help us out. Pick up the book. Get it for a friend, for a present. It's too late for Mother's Day.
Well, but Father's Day's coming
up.
All right. So I'm going to start with chapter 6. That's actually kind of the introduction to Valley or the idea of Valley in the Tao Te Ching.
Chapter 6.
First time we see it. The spirit of the Valley is deathless. She is called the Mysterious Mother. The womb of the Mysterious Mother is called the source of heaven and earth. It flows endlessly, almost imperceptibly. Tap into this, it never runs dry.
We had a few options for the infinite or the endless or the unending, and they're all very fun but problematic in their own way. So the infinite is too Greek, to mathematical. The endless is a little bit tiring. Like, there's a lot of things. There's a great, oh, this is an infinitely cool party. Or, this is an endless party. Like, these are different things.
Yeah, and eternal, you could throw
eternal,
in there.
Eternal, but then there's so much, like,
baggage.
John 3:16 Christianity to it. Undying is, I think, a really helpful word there. Even though death is involved, in the valley, things are being born and then dying and going back into the soil. In its sense of being a system, like a complex superorganism, the valley, the nature that we find ourselves in here or anywhere else, is deathless. Even though it's in a precarious, almost going to be dead state, you know, in terms of the global ecology.
But even that.
Yeah, even that, right? I mean, even that. Well, you could tell me about that.
It morphs into other things. I'm just saying, whatever happens. Maybe it's the end of humans, but I don't think it's the end of the matter on this universe. The planet we live on. Yeah. Something's going to happen to it.
Eventually, yes.
Eventually, one way or another.
So its deathlessness, though, is the idea that it's breathing in and out.
Yes.
Right. So it's just this breathing in and out, and that's what we were feeling here on along the river, and you could just feel it change. We felt this at Joshua Tree. I remember one of the most powerful moments I've ever experienced of understanding the sense of Mother Nature, if you will, being this living something, was when I was feeling like I was in the lungs of the earth in the Mojave Desert. I could feel that wind at even a greater scale. Yeah. And I just realized, oh, the earth is breathing.
Yeah.
When you're in Orange County in a condo, it's hard to feel the earth breathing. This is why nature and certainly Taoist sages always thought it was important to make sure you're putting your feet in the water every once in a while and feeling nature.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that's interesting too is whether it's a desert or whether it's, you know, there's a river and lots of life in the valley. There's lots of life, period. I guess the desert has lots of life as well. I mean, there was sort of a scene that felt a little desert-like that we were in Colorado. We were up on top looking at this valley.
That was the best prehistoric-looking valley we've ever seen.
And then out of this cave comes all these bats. All these bats.
The myriad bats.
Endless bats. But it was crazy. And they were all going
to the valley.
To the valley. And they were
to get their food.
They were going to find food.
In the valley.
See,
this is the key. Yeah, right, right. Because we always, all the religions of the world, it's on the mountain. Moses goes up onto the mountaintop to get the Ten Commandments, and the Aztec king is going to go up there, and there's sacrifices to meet God on the top of the mountain, and the Tower of Babel, and all this. But the mystical way, this is why I like this, the mystic is the yin side of spirituality, as opposed to the yang side. Popes or yang.
Yeah.
Whatever you know, that individual pope might be as a personality, having a pope, that's a very yang move. That's an active power move. The mystic is one who receives.
Yeah.
And finds the ways in which receiving the nutrients of the earth, the riches of society or whatever, can happen when you become a bottom feeder.
Yeah.
And you're not worried about being called a bottom feeder in this sense. Because as you're saying, even the bats from on high, they're going down into the valley to get the food.
Yeah.
That's where the coyotes were. That's where all the nutrition was because everything was flowing down to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Including the water from those mountains. So those mountains are very important. There's no reason not to think that those are important as well. As we're talking, the wind is just really whipping up through the trees. What a wonderful breeze.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing, though, on chapter six that I want to hit on, too, is the idea of the mother image.
Yes.
So there is this, there is life, but there's the giving birth. There is the sort of the, what, in order to have a valley, you have a wide open area with two higher tops, right, on either side of the valley, right?
Yep.
You got, otherwise it becomes something else, right?
a plane.
It could be a plane or a plateau if the sides are shorter. But anyway, so that idea, there is a way in which, and I don't know, hopefully this isn't offensive to anybody, but it can be sort of like a woman's legs being like spread open, right?
That's all I think about when I read this, just because I think that's intentionally part of the affirmation of femininity in the text.
And giving, and there's a point of the mother in this giving birth by just being able to just receive. And there's that image that's really powerful of kind of like life comes out of that, of the woman receiving.
And then it
produces life. So I'm going to move on to it kind of a little bit of kind of worth with that openness is what I see as well.
Yeah.
Sorry, do you want me to?
Can I go back to six?
Yeah.
And I think regardless of whether you believe in deities, I think it's really important that this text doesn't even really, to me, affirm whether there's a mother goddess or not in a some kind of pagan sense, however that would look to you. But it is interesting that it's juxtaposing this against a lot of the monotheisms of our day, where you have the main emphasis or the main image is the masculine.
Yeah.
And the father deity, a warrior deity. And this isn't even really getting into what you would do about this so-called deity, but it is saying that the image of the feminine is incredibly important, and probably if you have to pick one to rely on, go for the feminine because of this reception of all the riches of the world
and the giving of life after, right? It's not the conquering,
right.
it's the receiving, and then life flows from that.
We often think, oh, well, what I should do is I need to fix my situation. My situation's bad, so I'm going to go yang it up. I'm going to become as macho and manly and, you know, listen to Joe Rogan and get into my supplements and pump iron and all this. Find things if you like those things, but that's not necessarily going to fix the problem that you find yourself in.
Right.
If the problem was created by yang magic.
Yeah. Well,
if this makes sense.
We're going to talk a little bit more about that in a second. Cool. But I just want to read this one part of chapter 15 that talks about openness, and it's back to, we read it recently, and this one is about how the ancient Tao surfers were and like how we describe the ancient Tao surfers. And this one little part where it says they were wide open like a valley.
Oh, yeah.
Which lets muddy floodwaters tousle its landscape, then lets the silt settle in clarified streams. Then it stirs up still pools once again, reawakening life.
That was my favorite image that we did. Yeah. I like that one.
And it's all of these things coming into the valley, just being wide open, just being open to whatever is coming its way.
And sometimes turmoil.
And there will be things that kind of get tousled up.
Dirty water.
And then it settles.
Spilling.
Then it settles again. And I guess what, for me, I think what that reminds me of is I think sometimes people are kind of afraid to learn something new or to maybe shake up some of their systems that they have in place.
Mm-hmm.
But what we sometimes forget is only the stuff that is truth, only the stuff that actually seems to be helpful will stick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there might be things that you throw out there, right? But then what sticks? you say that you kind of do that in general with your classes or whatever.
Yes.
You kind of like, or even to Sid and I or whatever, you just throw out some crazy ideas.
Yes.
Like almost like tossing it on the wall and then just see if there's anything.
I'm holding back. Yeah.
Just things that, what do we then respond to? What seems to jive with us?
Mm.
And then you kind of build off of that, right? To sort of, I don't know, either make a connection or come up with some sort of crazy vacation idea. And we've talked about all of we've talked about all these different ways of making money or making a living. And we now like label it randomly, you know,
number idea 493.
Yeah. And then it might be, there was one where I don't know, I had a dream. I think that you said you were selling Tupperware. That you thought you would like.
That'll be the day.
I know. And obviously, you're not going to do that. But those are the kinds of things. Like, you know, like, and so that was my dream, right? Of he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to sell Tupperware. I think the idea, even with selling Tupperware, which, of course, there's no way you're ever going to do that. But being open to just hearing some of these ideas, right? The out-of-the-box thinking. And then sometime in some future point, there might be something that actually sticks, that actually
right.
Like, huh, you know, but
it starts to make more and more sense.
And these other ideas that make no sense at all, they'll just fall by the wayside. But why are we so afraid sometimes to hear
what, yes,
the new idea,
thank
the
you
new concept.
Not you, but I mean
in general,
right? Like, okay, it is weird to want to live in a truck camper, but that was some of the most fun we've had.
Yeah, well,
and then right now we shouldn't be living in the truck camper, so it's good to sell it, or in this case, get it stolen.
Something like Post-it notes came out of a mistake, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, things sometimes just arise out of open, what flows, what comes through.
Yeah.
And you had mentioned a little bit about yin, and, you know, in the valley is definitely a very yin concept, a concept of, you know, us receiving, right?
Which means, by the way, dear listener, if you are finding yourself right now stuck and having a problem because you're trying to push really hard, kick really hard against that problem, maybe ask yourself, is there a way to be a little bit more yin-like and see if you can solve or melt the problem away that way? Sorry.
Yeah, so this is a little excerpt from Chapter 32, and it says, "We find joy in mastering the names of the things we experience, but let that be the extent of our attempted mastery. Knowing how to stop trying to control everything is the key to averting disaster. The Tao works throughout the world like this. Water melts into valley streams, then spills into rivers, then sinks into the depths of the oceans." And notice, like, that whole progression of...
That's a beautiful chapter. Which one is that?
This is from chapter 32.
It's a wonderful thing to have somebody read while you're sitting and then hearing not only the wind, but this beautiful river with the falls behind us. We hear the waterfalls.
Mm-hmm. But it's that there's so much need we often feel to control things. But when we're not trying to control things, mm-hmm. The Tao is saying that that's the key to averting disaster. So you mentioned, mm-hmm. You know, if you're trying really hard against a problem, that leads right into this, right? Like,
did we share with the dear listeners that we found our dream home, but it was going to get carried away?
I don't know. I don't think so.
We always, you know, of course, the Tao Surfer Ranch still for sale if you'd like to purchase it. It's wonderful. It's got good magic. Down in Escondido. Looking at it, the pictures again, just remembering all the beautiful memories and how wonderful it is as a valley because the fires didn't hit it. There's some old trees.
Yeah.
There were some boletes. I mean, I'm in this valley. I'm looking in our property down there across the valley, and I see on the other side of the valley, it is just sun-baked. It looks like a desert. It looks like the Sonoran Desert across from us.
Yeah.
But then underneath, or where we're underneath, are deciduous trees, and there's a willow, and there's this big, beautiful old oak.
Yeah.
All of these trees.
We had somebody come out and I mean, I don't know. They were thinking that a couple of those trees were like maybe a couple hundred years old.
Big, beautiful old oaks. Yeah. And they've all been able to survive because it's just even in the drought, constantly letting a little bit of water trickle through.
Well, and we do have that little creek or whatever you want to call it, a little stream going through it. And
that's what
year,
I'm saying.
And that's year round.
Smaller river down below.
So, yeah. And so
if you want to survive the apocalypse, friends, buy our property.
But when you look from an aerial view, you see this patch of green. And those green trees go right through our property.
It's like if you have a cleft chin and you're trying to like shave your chin and there's still a little bit of hairs in that. That's kind of what our property is, in the sense that stuff passes by it.
Mm.
It lays low. Mm-hmm. You know, the disasters can kind of come and go over it.
As well as the land where we are is super fertile. Across the way, they say it's clay.
Yeah, but our stuff is just, all this stuff's coming down. And this is an infomercial for why you should buy this agriculturally approved land as well. You could put a house on it and some agriculture. It's a funky area. But behind us, there's a lot of people that lost their avocados because they shut off the ability to irrigate it through the pipes. We just have it coming straight out of the ground.
Mm.
And all of that nutrient and everything, we tested the water, you know. And so that's actually why we were reading the Tao Te Ching when we got this land.
Yeah.
And we wanted to, in a sense, create a place where we could have our own architecture with open, like no walls, basically. Kind of like the Taoist art. And my dream is a beautiful dream. We wouldn't have hurt anybody. No. It would have been really nice. I would just sit there. And I would meditate on my tatami mat as I looked out over the valley and had all the walls open. And then at night, I'd pull the walls down, close it, and maybe create a little stove fire. But of course, none of this is approved by the county.
Well, not yet.
No, not yet. But I mean, but what I'm saying is, like, that to me is the dream. But nobody, it sounds absurd to people.
Yeah.
But like, why would that be absurd? It's perfect. Everything. I don't need air conditioning when I'm in the shade.
Yeah. Well, that is interesting too about our property there, because there is a sun section,
mm-hmm.
and it gets very warm, and then there's the part where you can retreat underneath the trees. So you can have the same way that we're walking over here to the river to get our warmth, taking a dip in the water to cool off, and then, you know, retreating back into the shade. But back to the Tao Te Ching here in the valley, when we're thinking of this whole, the openness, and you mentioned already a little bit about the difference between the feminine versus the masculine, and we were just talking about how, like, you can't, you know, just try to control everything.
Right.
And so yin, of course, is a very strong image in connection with the valley. And I feel like this part about, there's like an aspect of receiving in addition to being open, right? So there's like all these different little tiny pieces here. Chapter 61 also kind of goes into what I think is sort of that yin category of, and then talking about receiving here. And it says, a great country is like a river through a valley with tributaries naturally flowing into it. It receives all, and this feminine power is ever able to calm agitated masculinity through its humble tranquility. So a great country thrives. So a great country thrives by bringing smaller countries together. Likewise, small countries can stay humble and appeal to a great country for support. In the first case, humility leads to gaining allies. In the second case, humility leads to gaining aid. And so I think from here, it's that idea that using some of that yin energy helps make sure all the needs get met.
Yeah.
Rather than just like, you know, looking after like domination, trying to just, you know, go after what I want or in only me or something. You know, there's this whole thing, the whole thing flows together in a very humble and receiving aspect or power, if you will. Energy, I guess.
No, but I mean, I think power is an okay word, but it's like this anti-power. It's weird. it reminds me, I was kind of visualizing it. It made me cry when you were reading this because it's so true, so beautiful, and I don't know how to possibly see our society, our global society, pulling it off. But the idea is, as a libertarian socialist, I am not a big fan of a one-world government unless what this means is the solidarity of a network of all the human autonomous communities that are ensuring each other's mutual aid and liberty. But the key point here is this idea of some kind of country that doesn't go out and colonize or dominate other places, but creates a great party.
Yeah.
And then people come to the party and they bring their beautiful food and they bring their riches in terms of literature and poetry and dance and all of this. And then we just gather together and have a celebration. And there's mutuality. I make something, you make. But this is, you know, like in the Hebrew Bible where Egypt, I'm not saying Egypt was great, but when you get the image of what Egypt was, the first part is Egypt was the place that they had actual grain and everyone's starving to death. So people went to Egypt.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what if what we do as a society is we have these urban centers that when people travel off into the world and explore it, then if things get bad, then there's a safety place, there's a nest to come back to. Why wouldn't we do that? Or why do we hate our fellow human species so much, you know, that we wouldn't think that that's a legitimate thing? But here you have this idea that I think at its best, you know, and I will definitely say, of all of the horrors of the history of China, I probably would throw my dice and want to be part of some era in the history of China prior to Chairman Mao. Not that there weren't other horrible times, compared to life in the Middle Ages in Europe or even in Japan. You know, maybe, you know, play your cards at the Malinese Empire or something in Africa, you know. Definitely, I don't like any empires if I can help it. But I'm saying, as far as empires go, there was a certain moderating of the evil that Confucianism and Taoism did bring to China for a long time. And this idea that China as a thing wasn't a territory to go expand, because China doesn't really do that in its history. China expands within its own Middle Earth as it understands it. China isn't the kind of historically kind of culture that's going out and taking over places far, far away.
Interesting, yeah.
You know, well, they're not like...
They also have a lot of territory.
They got enough to handle, and you get the Mongols on the north.
I'm thinking of the game of Risk.
And, it's definitely a risk type question, yeah.
And when you are looking and you have a territory to hold down, then it's harder to branch out beyond that, right? Because otherwise you're spreading yourself too thin.
But I guess so that when you think about the best of Chinese imperial culture, it was people drawn to the Han game because it was working for people, right? Like, so yeah, people want to come to America to try out this dream, this enterprise dream. Well, that's good. Everybody's allowed to play these risky games if you want, but the idea that the only god for civilization should be the hustle is odd to me. That's the American capitalist game, you know?
Yeah.
But that's not the game there. It's not an exploitative thing. It's at its best. Again, China was saying, we have wisdom, you know?
Yeah.
Come enjoy, come be a part of this because, you know, you don't want to be a barbarian. Come over here, you know? I don't think that China is able to do that consistently in the sense that China is an empire, and no empire is able to do that consistently. Mm. But that at least is a better starting point than the idea that we're going to go rape and pillage the earth.
Yeah.
At least that's a better idea than the one where we say we're going to go exploit the world, conquer, enslave, take over the globe as conquerors. That's in our cultural blood.
It is interesting.
As,
I feel like
as Westerners.
There's a lot of things that, I mean, obviously what people talk about TikTok and, you know, things like that. So there are ways that, I mean, in a lot of ways, China is controlling through yin of, through our
that's true.
Technology,
like, okay, we'll
through
be the
our
servant.
Social media,
we'll...
but like we're letting them in.
I want to get into that. That's a fascinating insight.
But it's not through bombs At least not right now.
They got their big military, but their main way of conquering everybody is by buying the properties in Irvine and...
It's a far more...
Managing the media and having so much money that the NBA has to bow before them.
It's a far more yin way. I'm not saying Tao approved, but I will say yin way of, you know, conquering something if you are going to. I will say much... Back to a Tao way, though, there is also the concept of the valley with being lowly. And, and it's the lowness of the valley. And this chapter, I'm going to read a little excerpt. From chapter 28. Understand the white, but treasure the black. Be an example for the whole world. Serving as an example for others, you'll still have sufficient duh to rest in the infinite. Understand glory, but treasure humility. Make yourself lowly, like the deepest valley. Do this, and you can harness enough of Da's flow of energy to move mountains.
Faith can move mountains. Kind of a similar.
Yeah.
If faith isn't belief in something stupid, but just openness to the power of the universe, and I think Jesus, when he said that, the mustard seed and the faith that can move mountains isn't too far off.
I would also say that, like... I know you kind of, might be dipping into river territory here and what maybe the river is, but I will say that the fact that, like, you can move mountains, you can carve out mountains from the water that comes through.
The water carves it out. The canyons, the gorges, the valleys, yeah. Right. It's all very yin.
And it's amazing how something as... flexible as water can be so powerful. I mean, we're in the valley that we're in, there's falls. And when you get close to where the falls are, like just the energy, the strength of the water just tumbling down.
Breathtaking, but not in a cute way, in a
powerful way.
Yeah, the water is the water that we can hear from where we're sitting right now. Good listener, you probably can't hear it. Thanks to our very high-quality headsets. But if you were to sit with us, you would hear this low purr of the earth. And there's no engines there. This is just the earth flowing with its water. But it is very powerful. And you can see how this water has just blasted through in a few 10,000-year periods. Through these rocks.
And then when you think of like sort of the lowness, because you're not trying to be high or anything, it's just, it's that all receiving, that all lowness sort of thing. There's another aspect of it, which is humility. And the strength of humility, you know, if you think about it, if you do something that's wrong, it's like really wrong, one of the biggest strength things you could ever do is admit that you were wrong. You can be humble and admit that you make mistakes. And that's, there's a lot of strength and power in that. Anyway.
And it helps get things solved.
It does. It does. I'm going to read all of chapter 66. I think that there's something about it that really like kind of hits home here with the valley. Rivers and oceans rule 100 valleys. Since they are low, they receive the tribute of 100 tributaries. So for a sage to be a top leader, they should speak from the perspective of those who are on the bottom. If they want to lead people forward, they should put themselves at the end of the line. In this way, they transcend others without looking down on them. They're way ahead of others, but people know they aren't in their way. So everyone is glad to get behind them and carry them forward. A sage isn't contentious, so no one can contend with the sage.
What was fun about translating that one was we were wrestling with all these images. Where is the sage? Are they in the front of the line? Are they in the back of the line? So they try to move to the back of the line, then everybody pushes them forward. That was hard. I think we pulled it off. I like that. I like how that worked.
But I think it's that idea of humility and being humble and seeing things from the perspective, not from the on top perspective, but from being lower, right? And I think, you know, this one thing that comes to mind, I was in a situation with in the past where I was managing somebody, and when I was talking with them, I was standing up while they were sitting down. And that was considered like a very threatening gesture. And it wasn't even like a threatening conversation. Mm. But that alone, like being up there, not being on eye level. Mm. And you can think of the power of what it is to actually like maybe get down on your knees or, you know, come from the lower position rather than like, you know, the higher position, especially if you have that title in your work environment. You can be seen as this like person towering over everyone versus just getting down there, getting in the depths and being
that
like,
is effective.
I'm one with you.
I got to do that more with the middle schoolers. Cause I'll try to tell the middle schoolers something nice. And then they interpreted it as like Jeff disappointed in me.
Yeah. It's interesting.
it's so
interesting,
hard.
But it's that,
but getting
you
on,
have to
yeah.
kind of that lower, get lower. And then, that brings me to another aspect of sort of how it seems like the Tao works, and it's about reversals.
Yes.
Sometimes like what something is isn't what it's all cracked up to be, that the opposite is actually in a way more true.
All right.
Or yeah, closer yeah. to the truth.
I know it well.
So chapter 41, there's a part where it says, therefore ancient wisdom teaches. So this is like some sort of, you know, back ancient folklore, ancient
it's
wisdom.
Probably not original to the composer here.
The illuminating Tao seems dim. The Tao progresses, but seems to step back. The Tao's best route seems too rough. Does summit seems like a low valley. High honor seems disgraceful. Abundant da seems meager. Steady da seems inconsistent. Genuine truth seems like relativism. Advanced geometry defies common sense. Extraordinary talent matures slowly. The secret chord is hard to hear. The big picture is hard to perceive. The hidden Tao is nameless. Yet the Tao alone can nurture the world from its birth to its fulfillment.
These opposites, sometimes people think, oh, that's just people trying to say things that seem puzzling and profound. And it could seem that way. And some of the translations do tend to lend themselves to that, just laying out the verbal paradoxes.
Mm-hmm.
But the paradox is meant to actually get you to realize something deeper, right? So this isn't about absurdity. This is about the surprising truth. The people who yell the loudest and seem the scariest are the scaredest.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
So when you reflect on, I'm just giving that as an example. When you give that as an example, I remember, you know, I'm not sure that Alan Watts always said it exactly the right way, but it was fun to see Alan Watts talking about how he enjoyed wearing clothes that the West would seem to think were feminine, like a kimono.
Mm-hmm.
And he would say this, and he had a beat on this one. This idea of these dudes who are trying to seek a hypermasculinity by wearing clothes that shout, I'm not gay, I'm not gay. Or I'm manly, right? It's not like 1984 where you're saying the thing is the opposite of the thing. You're saying the thing that they call that thing is the opposite of that thing. The thing that people in popular society think is powerful is actually very weak.
Yeah.
The dude's able to wear things that seem too feminine and yin and passive in terms of their clothing, say, are some of the great warrior sages of the East.
Right.
So I just think that's important because I think what turned me off to Eastern thought when I was growing up was the idea that, well, Western Greek and Christian thought is very rational and Eastern thought is comfortable with not having things that are true. And the more I think about it and the more I read these things, the more I realize what they're saying is true on its face. If you understand what they're saying, if you contemplate it for at least 15 minutes, eventually you'll say, oh yeah, that's just true. I don't need to have a footnote for it.
Right.
The Tao Te Ching does not have footnotes.
I remember, I think it was your mom one time.
Unless it does.
Did that quote from, was it Hamlet? But
Me thinkest thou protesteth too much.
Yes.
It was fun. Like, yeah, when my folks would if they were arguing and they would quote Shakespeare or something.
Yeah,
like,
right.
But it was fun. Yeah.
But that idea, though, but you protesteth too much. So, in other words, the more you're crying louder that this isn't the case, like, why do you have to defend that? What about this? Are you trying to say that this isn't you? So, why is it striking that chord? Because if it's not you, if that's just not true, then it's not. You don't need to defend it. You don't need to prove that you're not that. You can just be, because it's like, well, that's nonsense. But the more you have to argue it or, you know, shout it, then it's like, huh, maybe we're striking some sort of chord here. Maybe there is some truth to this. I would also say that the other piece of it is, you know, we've talked about how the truth is simple. Yes. As far as in, it's clear. There's a lot of clarity.
It's simple. It's clear.
But sometimes the most difficult thing you ever have to do is to pursue that truth. And so because of that, then we put all sorts of excuses out there of how we can't do it. It's not the right time or not, you know, whatever. Whatever excuses we want to throw out there.
Yeah.
But I think that that's the other thing that comes up here is with the Tao. It's like, there's a clear path. It might just be too dang hard to do it sometimes.
Yeah. Or you don't want to do it.
Yeah. And it's that reversal thing of what looks like the hardest path is actually going to be, in truth, the easiest path because it will get you to where you ultimately need to go. Without all of the distractions,
yeah,
right. I don't know. There's that piece though. Where
lives, like, I mean, you know, trying to like build a home in people storage in Firestone, Colorado, God bless it, was me chasing after a suburban dream as a 28-year-old dude, right?
Yeah.
And eventually, that was going to fall apart just because of economic and cultural. I mean, just all sorts of reasons. So. You save yourself some trouble by flowing with the Tao.
Yeah.
It's not like you should do this so that you don't go to hell. You shouldn't be a good person so that you can be not a bad person. If you really need to be selfish about it, living according to the Tao is going to be easier for you in the long run. Yeah. It'll be more peaceful. It's going to be, you know. So if you're balking at this idea, I don't want to be in the valley. I want to be on the pinnacle. Okay.
It's easier to knock you off the top. There's another one of the Tao Te Ching chapters that say, like, if you're trying to stand up, right? Like, you're trying to be tall. Like, you can be easily knocked off.
Everyone's trying to pull you down.
Yeah, everyone's going to try to pull you down. So the final connection I want to make with the Valley for today is the idea of union, that we are all one.
Yeah.
And the Valley is this place where everything can kind of come to.
Ooh, comes back to being one.
Right.
In an organic way, not in some kind of Platonic, the one way. But maybe Plato can be part of the party too. Because even though it seems to me that Plato has the one, capital O, one, at the top of a pyramid, if you just flip Plato upside down, everything's fine. Right, if you think about it.
Yeah.
If you reverse the hierarchy and just make the top the bottom, it's aesthetically much more provocative.
Well, that was we just talked about reversals, so yeah. But
so maybe worms and lead is the starting point, but if you see it, it's the entryway down. Anyway, I'm off.
But think about like cockroaches, though, right? They've been around forever.
They're doing fine.
They're pretty lowly.
And they're very lowly, and they're doing fine.
Right. Anyway.
They're not worried about the GDP.
No.
The gross domestic product. Except for they're gross in my home, which is domestic, and their product is poo-poo.
Well, all right.
I love the cockroaches, too. All sentient beings, just they can live somewhere else.
I did think at one point I was living in a horror story when we were in a shared living area, apartment-like, and at night, all of these cockroaches.
We had a moment. There was a moment when we had to do the cockroach apocalypse.
There was renovations happening, so because of that, it brought out all the cockroaches out in front, and it was like, I felt like I was in some sort of apocalypse scene, but it did show me that what is going to survive any of this
is the
are those cockroaches.
They're anyway. Fine.
Anyway, but we're all one. So even the cockroach is trying to just get to our water inside of
go
our
go evolve into sentient beings again, little babies, and don't create civilization. Next time, create a libertarian socialist society. Just let everything burn except for a couple copies of Ursula Le Guin's fiction. Okay. And the Tao Te Ching.
I was going to say, at least a version of the Tao Te Ching.
A version of the Tao Te Ching, anyone. You pick birds.
Chapter 39. Since ancient times, the following have realized union. The heavens realized union and skies cleared. The earth realized union and found calm. Spirits realized union and became conscious. Valleys realized union and rivers flowed through them. The living things realized union and came alive. Leaders realized union and modeled justice for everyone. All of this happened through realizing union. Without clarity, the heavens would experience total entropy. Without calm, the earth would burst forth with a million volcanoes. Without consciousness, the spirits would cease to exist. Without flowing water, the valleys would dry up. Without life, the living things would go extinct. Without justice, leaders end up getting overthrown. So nobility relies on what is common. High towers rest on low foundations. Leaders often portray themselves as working class, average folks. Isn't this an example of appealing to the commoners in order to form a base of support? Therefore, the highest compliment for a leader is to be accepted as one of the folks. So don't try to be flashy like fine jewelry, but instead seek the gravitas of an unpolished stone.
Heavy, pun intended. One of the things that strikes me about this is this idea of spirits kind of forming or emerging out of the pieces, P-I-E-C-E-S.
Yeah.
So peace, you were talking about this because a friend of yours.
Yeah.
Can you just share this one? This one's pretty good.
Yeah. So a lot of my tagline on a lot of my emails and stuff like that is peace upon peace with, you
Who
know,
knew?
Peace, you know, P-E-A-C-E. And as I'm working through some stuff with this person, they said peace upon peace, which is absolutely, I thought, hilarious because it was P-I-E-C-E as we are one at a time tackling these various things. And that was just a brilliant
with an underlying peace.
Yeah.
And so, friends, like, if you're, like, in these fragmented states, you know, like if you feel like everything's shattered in your life, sometimes we feel like that. What this union is not some kind of academic theological enterprise where you're saying, oh, I'm just going to, I am a sage, I shall attain oneness. That's what it is, oneness, unity. It's saying, let it all come together.
Yeah.
And fuse into a beautiful gem of the pieces. Let the pieces come together. You have pieces. You're in pieces. There are pieces of your life. All of these little pieces is what you bring together in the mandala of your existence and find peace. That's the game. It is saying, well, what did you learn from this?
Mm-hmm.
What is the gift in this, if there is?
Well, and
generally there is.
And you've even talked about how maybe after we die, it's possible that maybe we could, like, kind of look back and we can even see the past, present, and maybe the future of all of what's unfolding, right? And the whole story.
Yeah, seeing all the pieces from the infinite vantage point.
Right. And it's the same thing when you step back, that everything kind of looks beautiful. And it really is like Bosch's painting.
That the Hieronymus Bosch, when we went to Madrid to just figure this one silly inside out, was all the pieces were ugly sometimes. Not all of them, but some they could be ugly.
There are horror scenes within the whole thing. But the more you can step back and see it, the whole thing does look beautiful.
Kind of looks like a lotus flower.
And if it has like these doors that close, and it's like it has like a godlike character, whatever,
on the outside
that can then opens up, and
he's kind of embarrassed, like, God, what? No, but this is the thing, though. Instead of a masculine God creating these little entities called spirits, the spirits come together, they emerge, or sentience arises out of the flow.
And
that's the difference between East and West.
And they have this experience, and we all get to be witnesses of our own story as well as everybody else around us. And as we had mentioned, even in our last episode on Mexico, and there's all sorts of things that are affecting our earth, our world. And we are all in this together.
Valleys are drying up.
Whether we realize it or not, because we are all confronted with the same challenges. And not the exact same, in that there are certain areas that are feeling more of the pressure than others. But I am saying that ultimately, the whole world environment, the whole world economy, the whole world, all of us people and the way we interact with each other, it is one organism, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about even what we're made up with. We're inside. We have all sorts of pieces and parts and bacteria and organisms, everything that makes us us.
We exist through mutual aid within our own very flesh.
And there's a symbiosis that happens in our bodies to help us live. And when those things get out of whack, we get out of whack.
Indeed.
And that's the smaller version of it, and it expands all the way out to our world in general. And
microcosm to macrocosm.
And if we don't realize that union, that oneness, then I think then there is that. It's a bleaker picture, friends. And so,
you're just in pieces by yourself, and you don't recognize the unity that we're all. Basically, that is true. I mean, I think if you look around, all the people that are sad because they feel like they're not making enough money and they're weak and they're not good dads or whatever. And
yeah,
maybe it's because everybody's getting squeezed right now by a system that was corrupt from the get-go. So that doesn't mean you just wallow in all your sorrow, but it's like, it's a little easier to recognize, yeah, we're getting screwed, but we're okay. Come to terms with that. We're all getting screwed.
But to this fact, do you find yourself in a position of power? Do you find yourself financially in a really good, strong spot? Get yourself also to see and be with the people that are lower than you, that are less in there, just so that you understand what's happening. Don't be in a bubble, because then eventually they'll come knocking on your door because you got something and they got nothing. And when you get desperate enough and need to feed your babies, this is not a threat, but this is just what happens.
This is what happens. If you're the wealthy elite, if you want to stay wealthy, I don't even know if this is good advice to give to wealthy elite people. If you want to stay wealthy and elite, you should get low. You should humble yourself to learn what the market is that you're selling into. And two, get low so that you can see how close it is before they're going to be storming your gates and demanding your blood because of what you've extracted from them. Stacy is saying it's not a threat. This is what's happened. This is it's not even the problem with these liberation movements is they don't always have the ability to do something in a way that's sustainable and thought out. But the fact is, when you get down to zero and you see dudes like heartlessly extracting your blood and the blood of your babies, the revolution comes and you don't win it. Your type might win it in the long run, but you're not going to win it. So what do you really, are you fighting for, I'm talking to the rich exploiters that want to use violence to try to keep people in line. You could do that, but you're also suffering within that system.
I will also
That's
say,
not a good system for you to be in, for your own well-being.
There's another chapter of the Tao Te Ching that talks about when, I mean, if people are already dying and they don't fear death, then you can't even hold that over them.
Yeah.
So it you
when
know,
people are starving to death, you cannot threaten them with anything,
right? Because they're already dying, and they're seeing their kids or whatever, you know, all their loved ones dying. So then what do you do? What do you do? I don't want to leave it on that note, but I will say that we have to open our eyes. We have to be aware of what is happening on the valleys, the lowest parts. Are they drying up like a desert?
Yeah, is there less and less valley?
Is there, you know, is how much life is there in the valleys? Do we, you know, where are our values? Where's our head? All of these things.
I guess Stacey's saying, in one sense, love your mother. Love the Mother Earth. Because when you're looking at the valley,
yeah,
you say, okay, it's drying up. That's fine. Like, it's not fine. But you say, what do you do about it? Say, well, this is our life. This is where life comes. And if you don't realize that, then fine. Then we'll go on our cultural suicide. But we can go another way. We can tend to the valley. We can, first of all, get closer to it so that we can know when the poisons are flowing in.
Yeah.
And second of all, we can celebrate it and then bring more life to the rest of the world, spread it out.
And when you do feel that life, when you start to see things spring up and joyously, you know, come around you, hopefully, maybe you'll have some time to hang out over the next couple months with loved ones over as you celebrate maybe Mother's Day, Father's Day, some of these, I don't know, coming into the summer, you get together for, you know, various gatherings or things like that, family reunions. Maybe you can like really just enjoy all of the life that is coming up around you with those that you surround yourself with. And I hope in some way, shape or form, you can find some deep peace upon peace. Thank you so much, friends, for joining us for this episode of the Protect Your Noggin podcast. You want to join in on the conversation? We'd love to respond to your questions or comments on a future show. You can record a message by going to protectyournoggin.org and clicking on the blue voice message button. And don't worry about getting it perfect, since you'll have 5 minutes and a chance to preview your message before sending. You can also send an email if you're not comfortable with leaving a voice message. Please also follow us on Twitter at the PYNP. And rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you found this show of any help, why not share it with a friend? Until next time, peace upon peace, friends.
But he said there wasn't any leather. He said I was going out of my mind.
Not going out of your mind. You're slowly and systematically being driven out of your mind.
Why?
That's because you found this letter in love too much.